Hello and welcome to the Comicast, still Ireland's number one comic podcast.
Still.
Yeah, there's a lot of haters out there.
Who's checking that?
Me. Well, I haven't seen any stats to that say otherwise. You know, no one's presented any, so therefore...
No one's challenged us.
Yeah, exactly. So we're happy to keep that title as long as possible. I'm Craig.
I'm Liam.
And we're here with an interview podcast. Just in case you've never listened to the show before, every 2 weeks we go out and interview someone. That's our interview show. And then 2 weeks later, we will do a show where me and you just talk about comics and what's going on in our personal lives.
You've really simplified the show down to it's, you know, exactly what it is.
To its essence. Absolutely. Because yes. People may not know. Maybe this might be someone's first podcast.
Yeah.
Probably not. I think we've kind of hit saturation point with the 15 or yes. so listeners we have. You know, maybe
who knows?
This could be number 16. So this week you went and interviewed...
Brian Koldrick. Who is an illustrator who first came to my attention from full page spreads in Totally Dublin, where he used to be... allowed to let his imagination run wild.
Yeah, yeah.
That sentence was quite hard to get out, but I got it out.
Despite being a cliche that you've heard over and over again.
But Brian has taken part in many exhibitions, and I guess you'll really hear all about him in this interview. I don't really want to say too much, because we discussed pretty much all of it. But, okay. You know.
We'll get to the nitty-gritty
afterwards. Yes.
So, play the tape, Jim.
We're here in the Central Hotel. It's a miserable day outside, but it is always bright and happy in the library bar. And I'm here with Brian Koldrick.
Koldrick. Yeah. Don't worry, I'm used to it being every possible pronunciation and spelling.
A Dublin-based illustrator. So first question, Beano or Dandy? Which was your weapon of choice as a kid?
Yeah, that's pretty apt. Yeah, Beano.
Beano
was me for some reason. I don't know why. I read Dandy as well, but the Dandy always was a bit kind of weirder. Like, I don't know.
Wait, in its characters?
Yeah, I didn't think they made as much. I don't know. Dennis the Menace, he was like, you know, he was just a weird, cool kid. And, But Desperate Dan, like, kind of, you know, he's a cowboy who had cowboys in a British comic book. No, I don't know. You'd think I'd prefer the weirder one, but no, I always found the drawings and the characters in the Dandy a little bit too unpleasant. There you go.
Did you read many comics, as a child or growing up in general?
Yeah. I remember, like, when I was really small, I did read loads of, like, the Beanos. My dad used to get them for me and my brother. And I remember when, like, kind of, you know, you wouldn't really be able to read very well, but you'd still sort of, like, enjoy looking at the Beano or whatever. And it was that kind of weird thing of, I just think when you're a kid, everybody automatically like comic books. It doesn't, you don't have to be into them, but just kids like pictures and stuff. So I did, and then I just sort of vaguely never went away when normal people, I don't know, grow up or forget how to like comic books. I just kind of kept on looking at various random things.
Did you move on to superhero comics, as some people did, like during
not
their teens?
Really.
Or?
When I was a bit older, I remember reading lots of Tintins.
Ah, yes.
And then that was also the thing that, like, some people liked the Dandy, I liked the Beano. It was much, much more advisable to like Asterix. But, like, Asterix also seemed kind of silly. Well, I kind of liked weird Belgian, slightly racist Belgians running around, you know, stopping drug smugglers. I don't know what that meant. But, I remember liking Tintin, and then sort of early teens... I never really bought them that, like, you know, religiously, but really got it, liked 2000 AD. And that was particularly just, like, the art was crazy. And, you know, when you're kind of 13, it's just full of mutants and robots and scantily clad women and all this kind of stuff. So it was great. Though I never really got religiously connecting about it like some people do. And I did the whole American ones then. Probably later on, I kind of went straight into sort of Vertigo and that kind of stuff, and I kind of liked some of the superhero ones for the art, and so it was weird, I kind of went a background way, and the superheroes were almost one of the last things I kind of got into, just because kind of the drawings were great. There was a great guy, doesn't really do much such stuff anymore, Travis Charest, or I don't know if it's Charest, I think he's like French-Canadian, he did like an X-Men and wildcats and all these sort of things, and they were very like crazy posing Wolverine pointing at things and all that sort of stuff, and like the stories were very silly compared to stuff I'd already read, but it was obviously just I just sort of liked pretty pictures and the stories really didn't mean that much, but you know, I like stories as well.
I read elsewhere that you said that comics taught you more than art college.
About drawing?
Yes.
I don't think like in art college people have a weird idea about art college, you're going to go in and draw all day. I went into core, I went to National College of Art and Design, NCAD, and first year you're just in with everybody else, you're not doing a particular course, and then you spend 3 years in whatever course you went into, and I did visual communications, kind of like graphic design, so loads of your time is spent laying out type or designing crisp packets, or in first year doing stuff like weird abstract conceptually stuff, painting with a stick, it'll make you think about how you draw and all this sort of stuff. So in terms of actually being able to draw, most of it happened when I was like 16 and spending my lonely teenage years sitting in my room drawing pictures of, I don't know, Judge Dredd and weird random American comic books. So yeah, my wasted teenage years taught me how to draw, and then I slowly forgot how to do it after 4 years of college, and learned how I could get away with not spending as much time drawing.
What did you actually study? What was the title of the course?
It was visual communications. Most of it was graphic design, though the idea was it would also sort of take in illustration and photography and these sort of things. And it was that kind of an odd stage where I suppose this would have been 2000 to 2003. So computers were around and really used, but you know, they weren't really standard. It wasn't like everybody in the course had a computer by this stage and all this sort of stuff. And photography, we were still taught like, you know, darkroom film stuff, which quickly then almost died by the time we were graduating. So it was a weird in-between time. And I didn't like loads of the type stuff. Graphic design kind of sometimes bores the hell out of me. It's kind of useful for just, it still kind of comes in handy the odd time.
Yeah.
But laying out type for crisp packets is sort of my idea of hell. So I just ignored some of the odd project and got a zero. And hopefully if I had a good one at some other stage, it would balance it off and I'd still pass. Which I did, but this is terrible advice to give anyone.
Were you ever like able to incorporate, you know, the drawing into, you know, something like type, you know?
Yeah, like if there was any way of working at doing, approaching things kind of illustration wise, I often did. Some people might use type and photography and stuff, and I could always fall back on doodling something, and I'd probably be better at that than attempting to lay out a type fancily. And there were other times when I couldn't at all. They also they did do like life drawing, and there was an idea that kind of broke off, and he had slightly different projects and all these things. But a lot of my time was also like early 20s, so a lot of my time was spent on extracurricular activities which weren't very studious, let's say. So probably wasn't spending as much time on my coursework as I should have anyway.
But how did you come to the decision that, I guess it probably sounds kind of self-evident, but to be an illustrator, as opposed to...
Because I get away with it instead of having a real job, I think was the real realisation when you have that horrible stage when you're about, I did transition year, and then went to fifth year, when like you start being told about how to fill in the CAO form, and you're looking at the big list, and you're kind of going, oh, like... archaeology, I liked Indiana Jones, I could be an archaeologist, or like engineer, they build bridges, that could be when you find or imagine all this sort of stuff, and then you realise, oh, like, it's just going to be loads of horrible work, and this is never going to finish, and then, it's good. I was just good at art, so I kind of realised, come kind of 50, I might as well try and do art first, because that means I can get away without doing real work, which proved vaguely correct for some of our college, but also, I mean, like I think I was a bit of a layabout for some of our college compared. I think because when you're kind of young as well, you're interested in goofing off still. Like at secondary school, you're kind of like, you know, skip class and go home and have a sandwich instead. So I think if I was back in NCAD now, I'd probably appreciate more just the time to sort of do whatever you want, like to a degree, and find out about stuff while when you're there, when you're kind of 19, you're kind of, when it's now up to you and they aren't sort of pushing the roles and stuff like that, it's quite easy to fall off and fall back into a few things you can do, like doodling pictures. It was odd in first year when you were kind of mixed with all the sort of, let's say, fine art tutors. They all, well, not they all, but the few I had would often kind of berate me for drawing wacky characters with, you know, like sexy girls with guns and giant talking cats and these sort of things, and like there was nothing conceptual or experimented about this, and why isn't it made of chicken wire, and what does it say about my parents and all this sort of stuff. But then when I went into VizCom, into visual communications, they loved that because it was like, you know, that looks better than somebody not being able to do that, yeah. And it's eye catching. So when I did that, I was like, right, VizCom for me, I can get away with doing it. So yeah, all of my life decisions have been based on how I can get away with as little work as possible.
That's amazing. Well, with that in mind, how do you spend your average working day?
Well, it kind of varies. Like, I suppose the last couple of days have actually been good because I've had stuff on that needs to be in, like, during the day. So I'm not really much of a morning person, so the usual thing of getting up, which I think is kind of the standard for a horrible, massive quantity of my friends, no matter what they do. I'm just, like, spending 2 hours of just sort of emailing and Facebook and looking at random blogs and gossip and all. Just the internet just sucks half your day away. But it also kind of then helps me, I suppose, sort of vaguely change from being asleep into being awake. And then there's a lot of Photoshop hunchback development of slowly warping my body into just sort of being weird shaped to hold a tablet and get me blind and this sort of stuff. So if not, then I mean, sometimes if I don't have stuff on, sometimes I just don't do stuff. Sometimes I just, and then there's other times where if I get an idea for something that's not like a commission, I can get really into just get excited about it and spend time on it. But yeah, it's quite a variety, really. Depends on whether people are going to pay me or I'm interested in stuff. If not, there can be a lot of... I've seen far too many episodes of awful TV shows. You know, no one my age or sex should have seen as much Gilmore Girls or shows of Ellen or this sort of crap, you know.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, you can stop the interview. I was trying to think of slightly less. Like, yeah. not quite as bad shows, but nothing was coming to mind.
How did you get started, or what was kind of like, if, you know, your break or a series of breaks?
Well, I suppose it's kind of the hardest thing doing it, and it still is for me. It's like, you know, no matter how good you are, you have to kind of persuade people, let people know how dead you are, and then persuade them that they should hire you. Which is, when you come out of college, it's just sort of like weirdly blank. How do I let someone in a big office know that they can hire me or this sort of thing? I decided I didn't want to go get a proper graphic design job because the idea of it really like scared me, of just sort of designing Lou wrapper packaging and all this, and barcodes all my days. So I basically just sort of accepted to be a bit broke for the next couple of years, which I was, and I was still living with folks, which was amazing. And
amazing in what way?
Oh, just, you know, like the,
just the fact that you were
kind of, because I was back with them for like a month or two there recently enough when I moved out of somewhere. And it's that weird thing, you kind of, no matter how old you are, if you're living with your parents, you're automatically a teenager, because that's kind of the last time you should be living with them, and they're still wondering, like, why were you late, and, you know, don't make a mess and this sort of stuff. So it's odd to be kind of doing that when you're kind of too old. But no, the thing, I suppose, that marked the change in me from just being like a layabout hanging around my parents' house and vaguely starting, was getting a website up, which was just like, I mean, we did a bit of web design in college and my mind had wiped most of it by the time I actually sat down to do it. But it definitely, I got a couple of jobs in within like the first, like before this I'd still been doing a few weird commissions, but they were kind of more through friends of friends or some sort of connection. Indeed, and I was now getting the odd job from people who I'd never met and who hadn't, you know, they weren't my friend's uncle or this sort of thing. And so that was great. I remember like the first week I put up the website, and like I got like a job for and like doing illustration for an advertising company here or marketing company here, and doing like a t-shirt design for someone in Canada. And after the first week I was like, wow, this is great, I'm going to get like loads of jobs every week, and you know, I'm going to like live in a pen, this is amazing. If I make this much money every week, I'm going to be making like actual money. And of course what I forgot was I posted it up in loads of places, and so it was just all the people coming across it the first week, and then it just kind of went down to just above zero again. But yeah, it's just hard to, I mean, once you get hired, people know who you are, and they hopefully will come back to you because you did such a good job. Mm. But before that, it can be pretty hard. You're supposed to have to go around every magazine or newspaper or random little publication or online thing and just try and say, hire me. It's kind of like loads of people wanted to do stuff for free, I guess, but although I have done that, I generally advise people not to, just because...
Well, I mean, even first, like starting out, or
I'd be wary of. I think it's like if you decide to do it, that's grand. But I mean, I'd be really wary of people coming to you going, "This is really great. This is really great for you, and this will get you a lot of exposure and that kind of thing." It's like, yeah, but you obviously think I'm good enough to do it, so like, pay me. If you go, like, this is for so I have some friends, or I'm going to get to meet all these people who will hire me in the future, or I'm going to, like, you know, be on the cover of a magazine or something like that, like, do it. But if it is somebody that usually should have the ability to pay, don't do it for free, because they're just trying to skive off and get a cheap job, so which is kind of then offensive, because then it's like, you don't think I'm good enough to pay, but you would pay somebody else if you had the money. But yeah, that said, I've done lots of free things, and it can be nice to do free stuff with people you know, and it is like an interesting way to meet people and stuff like that as well. But I would be wary of a proper company or someone starting up an interesting, amazing project. I just did the inverted commas finger sign, which is terrible. It's even worse now that I've pointed it out to people listening. But
no problem.
Yeah, people do try and, I don't know, advise you with their interests in mind sometimes, so
that's like what you're kind of at. It seems to me, and maybe I'm wrong, that for the size of Ireland, there seems to be a lot of illustrators. You know, does that or maybe there's not, but does there seem like, is there a lot of competition for work, or does that create, is
I
there
don't
more of
know.
A community?
There's definitely a reasonable good sense of community, which I suppose a couple of things in particular have kind of brought up, like the IGI, the Illustrators Guild, like that's, you know, you do meet up. I met up with a bunch of them here in the central hotel not long ago when there was the annual general meeting. They're an interesting bunch of characters, but so that's kind of nice just to be face to face, because like 90% of the job is you alone at a computer or at a desk or something. I mean, there is the sort of selling yourself side of it as well, but a lot of it just boils down to you being by yourself. So that was there. That's really good. And also in the last, I suppose not even 10 years, like 8 years, there's been a lot more, particularly with the starting up with Candy, who organised the Sweet Talks. And that was good for all kind of creative types of sort of designers, photographers, and you know, architects, fashion designers, fashion stylists, all these sort of various things, all sort of being in the one place at the one time. It's all a weird big Venn diagram. Loads of these people kind of half know each other sociably anyway, and so you might meet people and you'll know their work and go, oh, you're a friend of blah blah blah, and the next thing you know, you're having a few pints of dumb talking about working on something together. So there is definitely social side, but I've never really come across any kind of real actual competition between illustrators. Things. Maybe with designers, where it's slightly more standard to tender. Like if it was a really big job, so like a few people might go, here's what we want to do. But you don't really get that as much with illustrators. And if they have looked at five different people, you often don't know they've done that. And you almost definitely won't know the other five or the other four. That's only happened once, and And like, you know, you still got paid for, yeah, for tendering, and so that worked out fine. But and it comes down to like a weird taste thing, I guess, where they'll pick who they like, so you can't really. I suppose you can be kind of bitter they didn't like you, but yeah, you know, like you have to kind of.
But they like personally, or there's the actual work.
Oh, the work. Oh, like, you know, sorry. I mean, like, but there's also, I mean, if they're selling, you know, kids' footballs, they don't want, you know, someone who usually does like horror film posters, or unless it's a particularly weird brand of football. But you know, and vice versa. I mean, like, they don't want to sell something really serious with really cartoonish imagery. Though, like, I mean, that obviously can be the point, but they'll probably be hiring you based on what they know of you, and so it's your own fault kind of for getting hired or not. I've never come across the thing of people being annoyed at other illustrators for them not getting work or stuff like that. And we're also, you know, we're all nice, quiet, mostly
no arch nemesis.
Not that I'm aware of. It's kind of nice to have when I should develop work on. I'll pick one at random and start bad mouthing them, just to develop get a bit more interest on the internet or something like that.
Let's talk about your work specifically. The sloth or the sloth.
I say sloth, but pretty much sloth. Everyone says sloth. But,
it's one of those. I was going to try and investigate how you would. You know, what's the proper... no, I'm good for tea, thanks.
I was going to leave that off air, but you just explained what was going on.
What is the origin story of this sloth that appears much in your work?
I just like them. I always like them as just creatures, just because they're so weird. And they seem like something out of like a Willy Wonka story or something. The fact that they're defense mechanism is just being really lazy. It's just genius. Like, it's proof God has a sense of humor or something. If you don't know, but not that I'm getting biblical about this or anything. But they're just really weird. So I always kind of liked them, and I used to doodle kind of a really early sort of prototype of one of just the long neck, just with the sort of with like kind of really just vacant smiley face at the top of it. And I think the first thing I can remember ever properly doing was I visited people in London, and a friend of mine who didn't like emails gave me her address and said, write me a letter. And then it was about like a year later, and I hadn't written her, and I was visiting London like in a week, and I realised like she'd be annoyed that I'd never written her letter. So I quickly did like a really quick just card with a sloth on it. And said, like, I'm sorry, I never sent you a letter, but I'll see you in like 3 days' time. Here's a card. And I drew the sloth on it, kind of sitting in a chair. And then that kind of card, I just kept on drawing them. And then I made a big kind of teddy model of them for my ex for her birthday. And because I'd continued talking about the sloth a lot, so it was kind of this, she wasn't too freaked out, but the sudden appearance of a sloth, she knew what I was going on about. But then we broke up, and on good terms, but she knew me too well and realised I was too fond of the giant sloth teddy bear I'd made her, so I kept him. And he's still with me, still sitting in my bedroom. But people just liked him, and I kind of used him in like various personal projects and things. I was kind of wary of throwing him into anything commercial, just because I liked him, but I'm still kind of a little bit. I know people like him, and I could probably do way more things with him, but I kind of like him too much to sort of whore him out. So I made a board game with him in it.
Okay, yeah, I think I've seen this.
It was like the object of the game was to be as slow as possible after board game.
Like the last to finish.
It was weird. Yeah, it was like I'd done it purely just for how it looked.
Mm.
And then I played it once I'd like actually finished it, and it was actually really good. I was pretty impressed with myself. But the idea was, I probably shouldn't be broadcasting this because someone would copy it, but like there was like four players, let's say, and you'd roll the dice and you could move anybody's piece. But okay. Like you wanted your piece to be the last off the board, so it would get really vindictive. Like three people would gang up on one person and move them off first, and all this sort of stuff. But he just proved weirdly popular. So I have other kind of weird plans for him and things like that. So hopefully he'll keep on making an appearance over the years.
Well, I actually want to ask, would you ever consider doing like a sloth comic?
I have, yeah, I started doing this thing, which I never finished, which I probably will, of just a short kind of picture book thing with them, kind of a wordless, it would only be about sort of 10, 15 pages that I'll probably still do at some stage. That I must dig out. I drew up a bunch of pages for it and I never did it. Kind of vaguely with my love of Edward Gorey.
Yes.
That kind of thing. So kind of like that. It's also, there's an Edward Gorey character that I honestly didn't see until after I'd started drawing the sloth, who's weirdly sloth-like. The Doubtful Guest.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Wears trainers. He's weirdly like sloth. But, yeah, there's a couple of other... I mean... there's a few little things that I would like to do with them. That's definitely on the agenda.
Does that actually, like, is it just pictures? Or
does it would it just, that would just be pictures.
Rhyming?
No, I wasn't going to do any type. It was just sort of him travelling in these, all these different modes. I must go back and do it. Like, it wouldn't take too long. I was going to do a fold-out kind of concertina print-out of it, a version of it, but I hopefully I'll go back at some stage. That would be, I have sort of three, like actual kind of whatever narrative things in mind to do that would just be personal, and that's probably going to be the first one because it's the least scary to attempt. And then there's sort of a slightly longer one, which I have kind of very greatly laid out in my head, which is more like a comic book, I suppose. And then there's a sort of a super long epic idea that I have been sitting on for years, slowly adding to and forgetting and adding to and forgetting. And I'll probably never like get that done in the way it is in my head because, I don't know, there's just like, it'll just have to like, you know, be set down. And at the moment, I just like having potentially being anything. But the first two I might actually do someday, hopefully in the next sort of 6 months. They are on my whiteboard list of things to do. That's rarely wiped, but often added to.
The Tender Trio. This is like a free magazine of illustration, or is it an online one, or like kind of like a PDF?
No, we did two. Like nothing's really. We haven't really done anything. It was myself and two friends of mine, Stephen Kelleher, who's like a designer and illustrator and artist, and Christian Reeves. And I was in NCID with both of them. Stephen went into doing like motion graphics, and Chris does like illustration and graffiti and stuff. It was just, I was just finished college and I was working in the Students' Union. Christo was still in fourth year, and Stephen was just finished, he was working for a post-production place. So we just wanted to put stuff out there. I think we'd kind of vaguely talked about it. So there was a few kind of weird, like we didn't, we ended up paying for it ourselves because we wanted advertising, but no one would give advertising for us to put into this wordless magazine of just imagery. And then people kind of liked that we didn't have advertising and thought we did it on purpose. But we gave them out for free and people took them. And the idea was we'd get loads of work out of it. And, you know, a week after handing them out, we hadn't gotten work. So we kind of, But people liked them, and like over the years then we did actually lead to stuff, which was great. And after about a year and a half, 2 years, we did another one, which is like slightly better stuff, and just handed out free. And we did a couple of talks and sort of live art things under the Tender Trio banner, but it's rarely raised its head a lot because Stephen moved to America, and we're just, apart from Stephen, me and Stephen's probably quite organised, but me and Chris are probably like prize-winningly disorganised and getting stuff done. So particularly as Stephen, the organised one, was out of the country, it just sort of slowly just sat there. But we did a few kind of like drawing things at festivals and stuff like that, and a couple of talks. And we did, there was a couple of weird ones we did. There was one we then put up on the website, which was good, of in this show that was on at Temple Bar Galleries of sort of democratization of art. We got loads of like super cheap little tins of beans and made the labels for them, and it was just all, each brand was just a slightly different doodle, and they were like, I think, a fiver. So we were selling tins of beans for a fiver. But it was also, it was just sort of nice to do something at an art show where people were like kind of buying the art for a fiver and then carrying it around the opening with a tin of beans in one hand and a glass of wine in the other. So it was always kind of a fun thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not dead, but it might reappear at some stage.
Any exhibitions planned for this year?
My vlogs, keep on putting stuff into random group shows. I had my first like proper solo show last year. It was kind of like oil paintings and stuff, which went good, and it was fine. But I kind of expected after that to suddenly turn into a part-time fine artist. But really, I just sort of went back to being a bit of sort of a layabout and drawing things on Photoshop instead. But there's a few group shows, and I possibly have the option of doing something in a couple of places that I probably shouldn't name, since I haven't organised any of them. I used to do this series for Totally Dublin magazine, mm-hmm. called The Eye on Dublin, which was just, I was kind of pretty much allowed to do whatever I wanted with a page of theirs every month. So I ended up doing about 3 years worth of them. It was into like the high 30s, I think, of them. So I wanted to have a show of just putting all of them together at some stage.
Would you consider a book of them?
Possibly, yeah. I don't know. I was looking at it when I stopped doing it. The magazine kind of got like with everything else. I mean, it's hard doing a magazine. They kind of semi folded, but they've managed to keep going. But I had to stop doing stuff for them. So around that stage, I was thinking about it like a good bit, but then it's kind of just been put on the. Actually, one thing which is of note, completely my fault, was I dropped a hard drive, which had like a chunk of stuff on it, and they're damn expensive to get fixed. So it's kind of been on my like list of if I manage to save up money, see if you can get all the data recovered on it. So until I do that, I won't have all of them. It's only a few of them on it.
Yeah, yeah.
It was and a bunch of other stuff, but. I should probably do that before I do it. But the people were people liked them, and they were pretty they were pretty accessible. So that would be one of the things I meant to do, and possibly things with the sloth as well. Everyone loves the sloth, so just give the people what they want: sloths and random cartoons lagging off things,
and board games.
And board games. Yeah, I've never really outgrown a sort of 13-year-old's idea. Just board games and teddy bears, little cartoon magazines. I need to aim a bit higher. I need to like start writing the first great book of the 21st century.
I meant to ask this to you earlier on, but what are your influences in any kind of medium, I guess, sir?
I suppose you mentioned kind of like the Beano, and I know that sounds kind of trite, but like in terms of just liking stuff, I suppose it started there, and definitely in terms of just style, then definitely when I got into 2000 AD, I really started trying to draw like these people, like you'd see like Kevin Neill and Brian Boland and Simon Bisley with all these kind of almost psychedelic kind of stuff, and then really loved like Dave McKean, did all the Sandman covers, and
Did you get to speak to him at the offset? Did I read somewhere?
I didn't get to speak to him, but I saw him.
Oh, right, sorry.
He seems a really nice guy. I don't know. Maybe he's terrible in person, but when he was talking, he seemed quite nice. I really love that. Just sort of that thing of, when you... I don't think you kind of lose some sort of motivation because of lack of isolating. When you're a teenager and you're isolated or something, and you're looking at all these people, it seems worthwhile to pump loads of time into emulating them, but as you get older, you can kind of appreciate stuff for what it is and maybe pick and choose. So these days it's definitely people I love, like another guy was at Offset, James Jean, his stuff is amazing, and there's a whole kind of gang of them. I think they all were in college in New York together, like Tomer Hanukkah, and there's a bunch of other people as well, but then random other various things. I love Chris Ware, and I don't draw like him, but I can say I really like what he does, and it, I suppose that has influence on him. And, I love I love Scott Pilgrim. I don't like the Scott Pilgrim is obviously like a manga version of or a version of sort of these sort of odd manga relationship comic books, but I think I might have even seen came across that before. It could be before I read it. I not particularly liked the way it looked on the cover, and so I didn't give it any time. But then when I read it, you know, I really liked the drawing. So I don't know if that's just because it was really well written that makes you like stuff, but it definitely helps. Any kind of random stuff, just random old illustrations, old movie posters, things like that. I suppose, as I was kind of saying earlier on, as I've gotten older, I've kind of gotten away with actually drawing properly less. I don't like, I really should go back and do loads of life drawing, and I don't draw like as figuratively as I used to, because I can kind of get away with like doodling little weird characters, but I do still like the idea of drawing figuratively, so maybe when I go do weird personal projects I'll get way more ambitious and realise I've forgotten how to draw. But for the time being I can just draw odd things and say it's a style, as opposed to I just did the finger thing again, I know. Anything and everything, really, I guess.
Thank you very much for talking to us, Brian, and hopefully
thanks very much for having me.
And that was Brian. He was a nice guy. What was it like meeting Mr. Brian? Mr. Brian.
Mr. Brian. Amazing. It was actually really good fun.
Yeah.
Illustrators seem to be nicer than the comic folk that we usually interview.
Oh, yeah, it's because our last interview was Nick Roach. It wasn't, so are you saying that Nick Roach something about how that interview went? Is that...
No. So, me and Nick are on the level.
Okay, so who's nicer, Nick Roach or Brian Kaldrick?
What?
No, you said it. Illustrators are nicer
like
than comic.
This is like the fourth time you've challenged me to put two people right up there versus. I'm not doing it.
Okay,
I'm not falling into that trap. So. Yes, Brian was a very nice chap.
Sounds
good. Yes. Very impeccably dressed.
Really? What was he wearing? How were his shoes like?
I didn't notice his shoes.
You should always look in a man's shoes.
Well, I can tell you that I was just wearing all black that day except for yellow shoes.
Yeah.
And
do I care what shoes you were wearing? No.
Whatever.
Yeah. So that was Brian.
Yeah, that was Brian.
And now, I guess, do we have any news that we need to plug?
Yeah, I think we do. We have some sort of comic event.
Yeah, why don't you tell us about it, darling?
So there's like a free table going in this comic event that's happening on the 12th of June in the O2 Village, kind of mishmash flea market thing aimed at independent publishers, arts, crafts, and design traders. Yeah, so basically... You know, this free table is there, you know, so anyone who wants to do a display or, you know, whatever, get in contact with these people. If you want to sell your comics, they're going to set up a Facebook page, and you can also email them. The deadline for submitting for this is the 31st of March.
Yes.
We'll link up the Facebook page and the email address because I don't have it in front of me.
On our site.
Yes, on our site, comicast.com.
Yeah, so check that out
if you're interested. Yeah, too. It's pretty good.
Seems like a good deal. It's free.
It's free.
Or at least, apparently it's free. There may be hidden costs that haven't been revealed in the email we got. Yeah, so I guess we'll be back in a week's time. A week's time because this podcast, unfortunately, was a week late due to Liam.
It wasn't what?
It was, well, you do the interviews these days, so who else are we going to blame?
Well, actually, if I may spill the beans, a bit of rumour, not rumours, just gossip.
Oh, yes.
So it was really late because the plan was to interview someone from the Irish Oscars Brigade, but they were in LA, doing what Oscar nominees do.
It was kind of stupid of us just to assume they'd still be around.
Yeah.
And by us, I mean you.
Yes, absolutely. And we should also mention then on that part that coming up in the next couple of weeks or maybe even sooner, there was a panel discussion that happened in Ballyfermot College between the three Oscar nominees, Irish nominees, which are... Actually, I'm not... Well, okay. It's Tom Moore from Secret of Kells.
Yeah.
It's the Granny O'Grim people.
Yeah.
And it's the guy who was nominated
for
visual effects and Avatar.
Yes.
And they're all graduates of the college. So they all came back to kind of do a Q&A with 200 animation students.
Yes.
So we have the exclusive audio.
Are you sure it's exclusive?
It is exclusive.
Awesome. Yeah, so we have that.
Yes. So, yeah, you'll be able to download that. I mean, I think it's about 3 hours long.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to, like, mystery science theater style, we'll be talking over the whole thing. Just, like, with stupid comments, you know. So you won't get bored by all that, you know, all those really talented people talking about stuff. We'll be interrupting, you know, throwing in the dick jokes and whatnot.
Excellent.
So, yeah, so come back in a week's time for our latest podcast.
Yeah, do. And to play us out is a song chosen by Mr. Brian Kaldrick.
Yeah. Enjoy.